come from this kind of from an on-the-ground perspective. I run a group here in Ohio that does policy and on-the-ground advising to the cities in Ohio on how to revitalize. And really all Ohio cities except Columbus, where we're located, are considered legacy cities. And the framing is that this country has so many older industrial powerhouses that were economic engines for their regions and really for the nation. And starting at about the middle of the 20th century, as our industrial economy started to change, they started to decline. And like Rochester, we're focused around a couple of main industrial sectors, whether it was steel or glass or rubber or imaging, like in the case of Rochester. So they weren't very diversified economies, and a lot of things started happening all at the same time, decline of industry, but also depopulation, people moving to the suburbs, and all these things kind of converged by the end of the 20th century with cities that were really challenged. And we wrote this report because there really hadn't been a lot of work done on why these cities were where they were, but more importantly, the focus is really on the fact that they all have assets. They have tremendous attributes still, despite their decline in population and economic distress, that we should be able to rebuild and rebuild on. So this report is really about laying the foundation for moving forward.
Right, and you sort of do a kind of a balance sheet, and there's a lot of things that you cover in the report, but you sort of do a balance sheet about, assets and surviving assets in those cities kind of can be turned into economic growth opportunities. That was one of the sort of equations that you spend some time looking at.
That's correct. Yes, so because these cities were, founded, were such centers for so long, they usually have, great universities or medical institutions. They, of course, have great housing stock, many, really attractive older kinds of housing that may be slightly on the decline but are, could be rehabbed and really renovated. So, yeah, there's so much in these places that can be base a turnaround on. But part of the challenge is really acknowledging where they are, acknowledging that they may not repopulate to the extent that they were in the past. And, we've seen this, it's been on the national radar for months now with Detroit going into bankruptcy. But even about 5 or so years ago, Youngstown, and I heard your previous person you had on previously talking about Youngstown, which is one of the most devastated cities, actually, though, did something very innovative. It recognized that it had shrunk and that it probably wasn't going to regain the same degree of population that it had. So, it began to realize, what are we going to do, not as a population center that we were, but what can we be smaller? So it's really not all about increasing back to the size that these cities were, but what can they be at a smaller size?
For our Regular Connections listeners, there's a lot that ties in for this discussion. And if you want to join the conversation, we've got the phone lines open now. You can do that, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. We're talking about not only this study of what you might call them Rust Belt or many Northeast cities have experienced with the loss of manufacturing bases, but what they ought to do now. And when LaVeya Brockman talks about sort of accepting the fact that maybe your population is not going to reanimate the way it was years ago, Rochester, I believe, topped out around 340,000, lost more than a third of the population. One of the very highly debated plans now is filling in a third of the inner loop around the city to make it more walkable, more accessible, more community-oriented. But we also took calls that day, LaVeya, from people saying, well, if you give up on the fact that Rochester is ever going to have 340,000 people again, maybe you do this, but why are we giving up on regrowing the city to that point? And in your experience, is there value in cities at least accepting the fact that we're unlikely to see a reboom in certain urban populations?
I think there is. And it doesn't mean that, maybe 50 or so years from now, these cities may not be back up in population. But just like, the change wasn't all about population loss, it's also about job loss, and it's about loss of central functions and regional migration. the regeneration is not going to be all just about regaining population. And with, you know, with shrinking fiscal pies, we really have to target resources and be more strategic. So once, you know, cities have kind of accepted where they are for now, they can look at how to target resources. And sometimes that means some hard choices. Detroit has had to make some of those, start to make some of those choices where you look at neighborhoods that may be stable, those that have opportunities, some not so much, and make some hard choices about targeting resources toward those more stable opportunity neighborhoods rather than those that have really gone over to the gone over the edge and the vacancy rate is just too high to correct, at least now. You have to start with critical key places and then move back out to others around the city.
Right. And Lavir, I think also you touch on this pretty extensively in the document that we're talking about, that it's not just about a lot of this conversation can, you know, about downtowns and about cities can be about bricks and mortar, but you talk about the need for sort of innovations and changes in public policy and in leadership. Could you just talk a little bit about what your thoughts are on the significance of those kinds of factors in this conversation?
Absolutely. So in terms of leadership, unfortunately, what has happened in a lot of places, I don't think Rochester is one of them, but as cities lose extensive population, the capacity also gets lost, you know, public sector capacity to address these problems. But that's not impossible to turn around, and that kind of vision is critical. We talk a lot about in the report about something we call strategic incrementalism, which is forging a shared vision of a city's future as a starting point for change. And, you know, it is about coming to some common understanding about where to target resources. And it is about being incremental and strategic. So, you know, you have to make change, starting perhaps with downtowns and particularly with the center cities as the source, and then looking at these emerging neighborhoods. But public policy is kind of a double-edged sword, because while you want to try to change public policy, again, you're more likely to see change on an incremental basis. So, for instance, if you are dealing with a housing crisis, which many of these cities are, and the vacant abandoned property, it's more likely that you'll be able to make some tweaks in shortening the foreclosure and expediting foreclosures so that these properties can get back on the market, or make some changes with how banks handle abandonment. I know New York State is looking at some changes in some of those statutes.
Some strategies for dealing with zombie properties, that kind of thing.
Yeah, the zombie properties. And while these seem like small changes, they are the kind of changes that are incremental that really can make a difference in a neighborhood. So, you know, we may not be able to see huge subsidies or public investments going to new infrastructure quite yet. You need to look at changes incrementally.
We're talking to Olivia Brockman on this Innovation Friday. She's the executive director of the Greater Ohio Policy Center and has helped put together a report for the Lincoln Institute of Land Policy in Cambridge, Massachusetts, that looks at a number of cities that look and feel a lot like Rochester, with loss of manufacturing and large job bases and perhaps economies that were maybe a little bit too tied into one industry. And then the question becomes, who's bouncing back and who's still struggling? Lavia, who is toward the top of the list for setting the model for recovery?
Well, that's a good question. When we did this study, it was interesting. We saw that a couple cities that have been kind of down and out are starting to emerge as improving. Pittsburgh and Baltimore are two of those cities. So, you know, while the trajectories on the decline have been similar, now they're, you know, starting to improve in certain areas. So, for instance, Pittsburgh has seen an increase in the millennials, which are residents between the ages of 25 and 34, poverty rates have been declining in Baltimore. More research, really increase in research dollars going to institutions in Baltimore. The unemployment rate in Pittsburgh has been improving. So, you know, we do see in some areas that certain cities are coming back. That does not mean that by any stretch that these places are, have turned around completely. Another interesting difference is between coastal and inland cities. The populations are stabilizing a little more readily in the coastal cities like Newark and Philadelphia, more so than in the Midwest. And I suspect Rochester is a little more like the Midwest, although I think it probably has, it's a little bit of a hybrid.
Right.
Those are some of the stories that we're seeing.
Great. Just another minute or so, Livia. Just it's kind of a flippant question, but it's kind of got a serious intent. How important are a couple of good bars to this whole conversation? And I'm serious because I think anyone who's travelled, if you go to some of these communities, I know when NPR's reported on Youngstown, one of the things they looked at was microbrewing, or there were a couple of good wine bars, and that became a centre for a whole lot of an engine for a whole lot of other things like startups and other kinds of conversations. Is that kind of flippant, or is there something to that?
Well, we haven't done a data analysis on the number of bars in each of these places. Or how good they are. But, I think, yes, that there's something to that. There's certainly a big difference between, a wine bar and, sort of a neighborhood watering hole. But having some increase in restaurants and sort of a commercial strip is really important in these places. And it's interesting you bring that up because we do see that the residential, there's a real focus on improving residential, which makes sense, and often the commercial strips kind of lag behind, and it's a little harder to figure out how to rejuvenate those areas. The one thing I will say is this millennial generation, and I don't know if y'all have done other shows on this, but that demographic is a huge demographic in this country right now, and that age group really loves to urban living, much more so than almost any other generation, in recent history. And so we have an opportunity to kind of re-inject our cities with this generation. They like to live in dense areas. They like to walk to restaurants and bars. They're very much like a lot of the attributes that cities like Rochester and Pittsburgh and Baltimore and Cleveland have. I think the question is, how do you make those cities even more attractive so that they stay, and how do you improve, school systems and the other kinds of infrastructure that you need for people to make a long-term life in these cities?